4, last tape of the conversation with Carl Rowan. I suppose we both assume there's no social change without power. Power is the key of social change.
That's correct.
What kinds of power does the Negro now wield?
Well, he wields a good deal of political power. He's got a great deal more power in terms of the international situation. This whole question of race is so deeply involved in what goes on in the world that in terms of this nation's leadership posture in the world, the Negro is a very important factor. The Negro has got a great deal more economic power than ever before was the case. Indeed, I've pointed out to audiences abroad that this revolution and this new militancy on the part of the Negro is in itself an indication of progress, because without greater education on the part of the masses, without a great deal more money than the Negro's ever been able to muster, he could never pay all these bonds and bails and court costs. That without political power, the fact that there's more support in the White House and in the Congress and in the courts than ever before was the case, this kind of movement never would have gotten off the ground.
In other words, you see this movement as the culmination of a long process.
Yes.
And not something that burst full-blown.
Oh, absolutely not. The movement never could have gotten off the ground but for a great many things that have happened over the last several years.
And several generations.
That's right.
But, as you no doubt well know, many Negroes of education and experience hate to take that view.
Well, I'm not saying it had to take that long, but the fact is that all that has gone on in the past made this movement possible. Without the NAACP's legal actions over the last many years, there would have been no basis for many of the things that are taking place today. Let's take, for example, even the inadequate education that the Negro has gotten in the last 100 years in this country. That was crucial. I believe that if you want to keep a man a slave, you've got to keep him ignorant. But once you start educating him, you're asking for trouble in this, in terms of keeping your slave, you see. And there were some states, for example, members of the legislature wanted an official policy adopted that the Negro should not be schooled, that he should not be educated. Well, these people were right in the sense that if they wanted to keep him a slave, they'd better not let him go to even a bad school. But he did go to those schools, and you're seeing some of the results of it today.
Frederick Douglass was right. Once you teach him the alphabet, you are through.
That's precisely right.
To what objectives is this threat of power directed? Let me state it differently. Every revolution is fed by hope and by hate. We have the hope. We know where that's directed. Where is the hate directed?
Well, I would think such hate as exists is directed at those public officials particularly, and those members of this vague thing that we would call the power structure, who have really abused their power and used it to block the Negro from getting any semblance of first-class citizenship.
You find in most revolutions of the past, they aim to liquidate a class or liquidate a regime. Now, there's no class to be liquidated here that you can isolate. No regime to be liquidated except, say, Mississippi.
Yes.
But Where is this object?
Well, there is a regime in a vague sense, you see.
Let's define it.
There is a regime in the eyes of the Negro. There is a regime presided over by a tyrant named Jim Crow, whose basic doctrine is the inferiority of the Negro. Now, this is the regime that the Negro seeks to destroy. Now, one of the problems today is that there seems to be a little bit of growing confusion as to what the purpose of all this is.
Let's deal with that. Good. Yes. Let's deal with that.
The NAACP has known where it was going all the time. The Urban League has known where it was going. And the goal has been first-class status of the Negro within an American interracial context. But we've got some youngsters in the street today who I do not believe are at all conscious of where it is they're going. They know what they're against. They know what they want in terms of having this particular restaurant open its doors to Negroes. But in terms of a larger goal that has some relationship to American society and the Negro's position as a whole, I just don't think they've ever gotten around even to thinking about it, let alone making any decisions as to what it is they want.
Do you gather that a man like the Reverend Galamison knows what he wants? I put him out of the air.
I don't know this man, and so I wouldn't have the remotest idea, but I would have to have some doubts about the depth to which he has thought about these problems in view of some of the things he's said and done.
He said some rather strange things, like destroy the public schools if necessary.
Yes, well, that's, you see, you get a lot of foolish things said in any kind of program like this, and I think the remarkable thing is that the Negro has heard so many foolish things said about him over the last century. The remarkable thing is that more Negroes haven't replied with more foolishness in the past, but we're seeing some of it today.
We have the problem, say, of busing in New York City. Some people say we would integrate at any cost by busing necessary. Most extreme point, 3 hours a day, 3 hours a day of busing. To balance the racial balance. But that extreme view has been, he was mentioned over and over again. I know one person, a responsible person, I think, who said to me in Washington, if necessary to balance schools in Washington, D.C., get them, the white children, from Virginia.
Well, I don't go that far. I mean, that's a position that I can't carry myself to.
Integration is to be treated in a context of other values too. Is that it? Equality is one thing, integration is another.
That's
you
right.
You have to be distinguished to make things work.
The point is that you can't make the physical presence in the same classroom of Negroes and whites the be-all and end-all of your objective. Now, I can say, let's have this community make a special effort to get some racial balance in the schools, not only because it's good for Negroes, but also because it's good for white pupils, because no white youngster growing up deliberately aloof from the colored people in this country is going to be able to cope with the kind of world we live in, et cetera, et cetera. But there is a limit to which I am willing to disrupt other factors that are important to the Negro and the white person and the country in order to achieve this racial presence in the same classroom. For example, I don't want to bus Negro youngsters 3 miles across town just to put them in a white classroom if nothing else is being done to change the reasons why this segregated setup existed in the first place. The Negroes' isolation and Jim Crow housing, the low economic status of those youngsters, the conditions that exist in the home because perhaps the father doesn't have the right kind of job or the right kind of education. I say let's do something about those things too in our efforts to achieve school desegregation.
And sometimes as a corollary that some values have to give in the face of other values.
Oh, yes.
Even the value of, say, integration, a special case, might have to give before other values.
Yes, this answering that in the intellectual context, that's certainly true.
That is, integration can become a shibboleth, which actually works against the matter of equality.
Well, that's precisely my point, yes.
That's how I'm just saying it back, so I'll be sure I get
yes,
that.
Yes, that is precisely my point. Well, I'm going to have to
all right.
Break it off.
All right, good. This is the end of the last tape with Carl Rowan. End.